The colonel wants her to have the works. No holdbacks. The soldier manning the door stared at Melody, and her stomach rose into her throat.
I'll put her in room 5. The double on the first floor.
Ferguson smiled.
Perfect.
He shoved Melody forward, and as she passed, he smacked her on the ass hard enough to hurt.
See you soon, sweet cheeks.
As he eased down the steps, he raised his voice.
Remember, officers get first dibs.
The soldier at the door dragged Melody inside and let the metal slam an inch from her face. His pupils dilated in the dark.
You're a lot prettier than I expected.
His tongue darted out between chipped front teeth.
We're gonna have a lot of fun with you.
Chapter 21. Danny. Harper Residence, Eugene, Oregon, 8 p.m. Hushed voices filtered into Danny's consciousness, and she struggled to make sense of the words.
And you really think that will work?
She would recognize Colt anywhere. I know it will. A young voice, maybe will.
They never patrol the area by the transportation department. Once they siphoned the gas from all the buses, it became a ghost town. You can get in and out no problem. Before Granddad made me stay home, I checked it out.
Danny moaned, and a hand pressed against her forehead.
How's her temperature?
Another man. Doug?
No fever. The antibiotics seem to be working.
If we ever see my sister again, thank her. If it weren't for her knowledge about animal medicine, I'd never have given someone fish antibiotics. Danny groaned and peeled one eye open.
I won't sprout gills, will I?
Colt chuckled beside her.
No, but you will heal from a nasty wound. It's good to have you back.
She opened her other eye and blinked away the crust. They weren't in the Wilkinsons' house anymore.
What happened?
After the ambush?
She nodded.
We checked to make sure the coast was clear and retreated here to Doug and Melody's place.
Where's Melody?
You don't remember?
Danny leaned back on the couch and closed her eyes.
It all happened so fast. Soldiers flooded into the house from the backyard. We only had one rifle. I told Mrs. Wilkins to go pick vegetables from the garden and pretend not to know anything.
Then what?
Danny took a few shallow breaths before continuing. Then they busted the door down and shot up the place. At some point, it all went blurry. Men swarming, Melody leaning over me, massive pressure on my shoulder. She reached up to feel but dropped her arm with a wince. That's all I remember. Colt leaned over, and Danny watched him peel back a bandage on her shoulder.
Round is still in there. It's not a through and through. I haven't stitched you up because I have to fish out the bullet. If I don't, you might die.
Why couldn't you do it while I was unconscious?
I didn't know if you were strong enough to survive it. You've lost a lot of blood.
Danny swallowed and leaned back as her vision blurred. Tell me something I don't know.
Will says the army took Melody and Gloria alive. He watched them get dragged out the back.
So why aren't you out there trying to find them?
Because I'm here, making sure you don't die on me.
Colt pressed the bandage back around the wound.
It was touch and go for a while.
She thought about all that had happened. Melody and Mrs. Wilkins kidnapped by the army. Getting shot. Almost dying. Danny's eyes flew open with a start.
Did they find Lottie?
Will answered. Nope. They didn't even check the closets. I'd let you pet her, but I don't think that's good for a wound.
Danny smiled. Maybe Will wasn't so bad after all. Thanks. She worked herself higher up on the pillows so she could see more than the ceiling in Colt's face. Doug leaned on the wall across the room, arms folded.
I'm sorry I couldn't protect your sister.
His shoulders eased and he dropped his arms.
It wasn't your job. I'm sorry you got shot. We never should have taken off and left you here.
Where's Mr. Wilkins?
Colt glanced at Doug before answering.
He's still at his house. Couldn't leave with Gloria out there somewhere. We tried to tell them it wasn't safe, but Granddad knew that's where she would go first. He didn't want her to think the worst if she came home to an empty house.
Danny nodded at Will. She understood, even if it wasn't the safest decision. She glanced down at her arm and back up at Colt.
Can we get it over with? The sooner you stitch me up, the sooner I can help get Melody and Mrs. Wilkins back.
Doug peeled off the wall and motioned to Will.
Come on, we can go root up something to eat.
Will stood up with Lottie in his arms, and Danny watched as they disappeared into the kitchen. She sagged against the pillow.
Any chance Doug's got some vodka?
Colt's brow tucked in.
To disinfect the wound?
Danny grinned.
No, to drink.
He grinned back.
You know you're not old enough to drink. Besides, straight vodka tastes awful.
Didn't seem to bother you back at the apartment.
She remembered doing the same thing to Colt not that long ago. Fishing bullets out of each other was becoming too common an occurrence around here. She reached out and stilled his arm.
Thanks for coming back. I don't know how long I would have lasted on the floor.
Colt focused on her wound and swallowed hard.
I'm not really an emotional guy.
Danny tried to blow it off.
I know, it's okay.
Hear me out.
Colt dipped his head, brows working up and down. After a moment, he rose back up to look Danny in the eye.
Like I said, when we first met, I'm not a family man. Never wanted to do the whole married with kids thing. But
you got stuck with me.
No, damn it, let me get this out.
He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand like his words pained him.
You're the closest thing to family I've got. And not the bad kind you want to get rid of, like your Uncle Howie who double dips in the guacamole.
Or my mom.
Colt managed a small, sad smile.
Or your mother. We're the good kind of family, Danny. I don't want to lose you. Not now. Not ever.
He swallowed and picked up a bottle of vodka he'd hidden at his feet. Colt pulled out two shot glasses and set them on the coffee table as he laughed back a wave of emotion. He filled them both and handed one to her.
I know it's not official or anything, but you're the best daughter a guy like me could ever ask for. So don't go dying, okay?
Danny looked at the vodka in the shot glass and back up at Colt. After clinking her glass against his, she downed it all in one gulp and came up coughing.
You're right. It's terrible.
She handed him the glass, but held on to it until he looked her in the eye.
Thanks, Colt, for everything.
He nodded and set the glasses down.
Now for the fun part.
He picked up a pair of tweezers, and Danny let out her breath in a slow stream. She remembered how Colt almost passed out when she rooted around in his arm.
I hope you're a better bullet finder than I was.
We'll see.
Colt eased the bandage back and rinsed the tweezers with rubbing alcohol. As he bent forward, she looked away. Pain lanced her shoulder as Colt opened the wound, and Danny squeezed her eyes shut against the tears. How Colt sat there while she poked and prodded him, she had no idea. All she could think about was ripping the tweezers from his hand and hurling them across the room. He poked something he shouldn't have, and all the air inside her lungs wheezed out in shock. A halo of black encircled the room. Ringing eclipsed Colt's steady breathing.
Don't pass out on me. I'm almost done.
Danny ground her teeth and dug her thumbnail into her palm.
Breathe, even if it's shallow. In and out.
Colt hunched closer.
I've got the bullet.
Danny concentrated on her breath. Her lungs sounded like a worn-out pair of Nikes with a hole in the sole, squeaking in and out.
Colt grunted in satisfaction and sat up. In his hand, a bloody pair of tweezers gripped a little metal slug, deformed from slamming into her flesh.
That's it? It seemed so small and pathetic.
Yep. Deadly little sucker if it hits you right.
She fell back on the couch. Now you have to stitch me up, right?
He nodded.
Afraid so. The antibiotics will take care of the infection, so closing the wound is the best thing.
Danny steeled herself.
Do it!
Colt swabbed the skin around the wound before ripping open a suture kit. Euclid Avenue Veterinary was stamped across the front.
You're using vet supplies?
He shrugged.
Why not? They're just as good as human stuff. Probably more durable, since dogs can be real jerks about stitches. Melody has a whole trauma kit in the kitchen. Doug said she used to carry it in the car in case she found a stray that needed help.
Colt pulled out the needle and thread and smiled.
Besides, it sure beats a strip of duct tape or some dental floss.
Danny nodded. He was right.
Thanks again for going to all this trouble.
He gave her hand a squeeze.
You're welcome. Now brace yourself. This will hurt.
Colt was good on his word. The stitches hurt almost as bad as the tweezers look and find. But when he finished with a good cleanup and a fresh bandage, Danny could finally think. The pain ebbed to a consistent ache, and she could handle it without fainting. A clean shirt sat on the edge of the couch, and Danny picked it up before testing out her legs. She wobbled, but didn't fall.
You sure you can walk?
She nodded.
I'm going to change,
Colt pointed. The bathroom's just past the stairs. Danny thanked him and found the little room a minute later. She locked the door and faced herself in the mirror. Blood covered her ruined sweatshirt, smudged her face, and brought back memories of a Halloween party when she lived with Gran. All the kids came dressed in costume. Danny had been a ghost. Just a sheet with some eyes cut in it. But she'd had a blast, eating candy, dancing to silly music. One boy had gone all out, face makeup and effects to look like a zombie. Not too dissimilar to how Danny appeared now. She bit down on her cheek as she tugged off her clothes. Gran had been the only family she could count on, but now she had Colt. She cleaned the blood off her face and smiled. The world might have gone crazy, but she would be okay. Together, they would make it. Knuckles rapped on the door and Danny jumped.
Get your clothes on quick. Harvey spotted a patrol.
Chapter 22. Colt. Harper Residence, Eugene, Oregon, 9 p.m. Danny hustled out of the bathroom wearing one of Melody's t-shirts and a panicked expression. Colt ushered her over to the kitchen table where Doug, Harvey, and Will gathered. Harvey scrubbed at his face where a beard now began to grow. Finding his neighbor murdered and his wife missing took a toll on the man. He nodded at Colt. They were coming from the south, no attempt to hide or play coy. 3 Humvees, one with a turret. Colt stared at the map Harvey brought with him from his house. We have to assume they're coming back to finish the job. Either someone tipped them off to our presence, or Melody and Gloria talked. Doug pinched the back of his neck as he stared at the little lines zigzagging all over the map. If they tortured my sister. Colt held up a hand. We'll deal with it, but right now we need to focus on not being captured or killed. He tapped his finger on the intersection 3 blocks away. What's up this way?
More neighborhood.
Harvey ran his finger down the street and paused at a blob of green.
This is a park. It's not big, but it has quite a few trees. Some decent cover at night.
Only if they aren't using night vision. Danny glanced up at Colt.
If they are?
Then we're screwed. They can see us 200 yards away.
Shit.
Doug leaned back and crossed his arms.
So we can't use the dark to get out? It won't matter if we're dressed in all black and keeping to the shadows. Current NVGs are almost as good as daylight. He turned his attention back to the map. Our best option is to find another place to hide, somewhere they won't be able to find us. Like a basement? Or an attic? A neighbor's house they've already cleared. If we can get inside quickly and quietly, we should be able to hunker down and wait them out. He pointed at the map. A street or two away would be ideal. Doug spoke up.
Lucas lives over here.
He pointed at a street much closer to campus, a mile away at least.
He would take us in.
That's too far.
But it's closer to the university. We'll be in a better position to rescue Melody and Gloria.
Colt glanced at Danny. We aren't all well enough to travel that far.
Yes, I am. I can make it.
She pinned him with those big, unflinching eyes of hers, and Colt softened. Such a tough kid. He needed to protect her, not force her to run through the streets of Eugene with the army on their trail. We need to figure out what they're planning. We can't just rush out of here and head straight for the lion's den. For all we know, they're hoping we do exactly that. Colt reached for his binoculars and handed them to Will. Can you set up on Melody's porch upstairs and watch the street? They won't be as good as night vision, but your eyes should adjust quickly to the dark. Will nodded and rushed up the stairs, binoculars in hand. Colt stared at the map in an attempt to memorize the streets and the best ways to make it to Lucas Shaw's apartment. After satisfying himself, he clicked off the small lantern and plunged the first floor into darkness. Now we wait and watch. As soon as we figure out what they're up to, we can decide. It didn't take more than a minute for Will to come rushing down the stairs. Even in the dark, Colt could make out the whites around his irises.
We have to go now.
Why?
They aren't canvassing door to door. They've got a torch. I think they're going to light something on fire.
Colt grabbed the binoculars from Will and rushed to the front window. He brought them up to his eyes and focused on the end of the street. A dark plume of smoke rose up at the edge of his vision, sparks of color visible at the edge of the horizon.
Damn it.
He put the binoculars down and turned to face everyone. They're trying to smoke us out. So much for hunkering down in one place and riding out the neighborhood search. Guess they didn't like not finding us at home.
What are we going to do?
Will's voice cracked on the last word, but he stood firm at the edge of the table. Poor kid would have to grow up fast. Danny had already learned the hard truth about life before Colt met her, but Will, he'd been lucky. Doug offered a suggestion.
What if we split up? Two groups, one goes toward campus, one goes away.
We'll be too thin. There aren't enough of us who can shoot and aren't injured. Danny and I aren't 100%. Will hasn't learned. We have no means of communication. Colt scratched his head. I say we leave, but all together.
Harvey shook his head.
We can't just run. They'll burn my house, Gloria's garden. It'll all go. I can't let that happen. The garden was everything to Gloria.
Danny spoke up.
She doesn't care about the garden. Not the way you think.
Harvey started, shoulders bunching up as he came close to shouting at Danny.
Colt held up a hand. Let her finish.
When we were shelling peas, we talked about it. She told me life was all about facing challenges and putting in the effort. That you couldn't just sit back and watch life happen to you.
Danny swallowed and kept going.
When I asked if she'd leave everything behind, she said yes. She would want us to do the same thing.
Harvey blinked in rapid succession and eased into a chair.
That sounds like Gloria. Always looking forward, never back.
He cradled his forehead in his hands.
I'm the one who has trouble letting go.
Colt gave the older man a solid pat on the back. You're not the only one, but Danny's right. We need to move. Staying here only increases the risk.
Hand me the binoculars. I'll check it out from the backyard. I built a berm back there for the pit toilet. It's got enough of a rise to see over the fence.
Doug hustled out into the yard. A breeze blew in the open door and brought a whiff of smoke along with it. If they could smell it already, the blaze was large and unpredictable. Doug rushed back in, pale and disbelieving, as he focused on Harvey.
Your house is on fire.
Harvey hung his head.
But not only yours. It looks like the army is out for vengeance. They're lighting every house on the street.
People are in the road, my friends, neighbors, some of them I haven't seen in weeks. I thought they were gone.
Colt nodded. What's the army doing with them?
Doug shook his head. Nothing. Ignoring them, mainly.
How much time do we have?
Minutes. Doug glanced back at the yard. There are a few houses down, but it won't be long. If we're leaving, we need to go now.
Then let's do it. Colt barked out orders. Everyone grab some gear. Danny, hand out the rifles. Will, get Lottie in that traveling bag of Melody's. Doug, sling that trauma bag on your shoulder. I packed a bag full of water, so I'll get that.
What about me?
Harvey stood on shaky legs. You take the binoculars. We need you to tell us where to go. In a matter of minutes, they were ready. Danny held a rifle in her good arm. Colt stood at the back door with a pack and his SIG, and the rest of the team followed behind. He motioned to go, and Harvey took the lead, sneaking out the back and into the side yard. They worked in a pattern, zigzagging around bushes and fences and away from the fire. When they reached the intersection Colt had pointed out on the map earlier, they paused to regroup. The house on the corner offered near-perfect protection with a gangly, vine-covered fence. Everyone except Colt crouched behind it. He took the binoculars and eased as close to the street as he dared. Doug was right. Neighbors in nightgowns and boxer shorts stood in the street, pointing and hugging each other. Fires leapt and danced across the roofs of at least four houses. Soon, it wouldn't matter whether the army lit more fires or not. The flames would spread. The whole neighborhood might burn. They had to move. Somewhere the army would never expect to look for them. Somewhere they could set up camp and regroup before attempting a rescue mission. Colt hurried back to the group and found Doug in the shadows. Can you get us to Lucas Shaw's apartment? Doug nodded. Lead the way. It's as good a place as any. Doug headed around the back of the house and out to the cross street. Danny and Will followed, but Harvey hung back. Colt crept up to his side.
Is there a problem?
The older man frowned.
Gloria and I lived in that house for 40 years.
He wiped at his eyes.
We raised our son there. Birthdays, Christmas, so many memories. Now there won't be anything left but ashes.
Colt wrapped an arm around Harvey's shoulder and squeezed.
But you're still alive to remember. And so is your grandson and your wife. We'll get her back, Harvey. But only if we run.
Harvey nodded and turned away from his life. Colt ushered him along and the pair caught up with Doug and the children. The ragtag crew hustled away from Belmead Way, dodging bushes and fences and one abandoned playset after another. When they were 5 blocks from the street and the smell of smoke barely reached their noses, Doug slowed.
It's a straight shot now, right through campus. If we get separated, Lucas is the brown 3-story walk-up at the corner of Pope and Sinclair. Top floor.
Everyone nodded. They had to make it. They had no choice.
Chapter 23. Melody. University of Oregon Campus. Eugene, Oregon. 9 p.m. Melody backed into the corner. The second the soldier shoved her into the room, she knew her day had gone from bad to horrible in an instant. They weren't going to lock her in a hole. They weren't going to forget about her in some dark, windowless room, where she could sing to herself and count down the hours until someone rescued her. No. It was much, much worse. He shook a gaudy concoction of cheap silk and lace in her direction. I said, take it and put it on. She shook her head over and over, pushed the heap of fabric away. No, I won't. He threw it at her, and it landed in a swoosh at her feet. He unholstered a handgun and pointed it dead center on Melody's chest. Do it, or I shoot you. She stared at his beady eyes, narrowed into slits. Greasy complexion. Scruffy half-beard. Rank whiff of body odor. The National Guard wasn't keeping up with its hygiene. Melody bent and picked up the dress. Can you turn around? Please? He flicked the gun barrel up and down.
and risk you doing something stupid? Not a chance. He smirked. Ain't like I'm not gonna see you in a minute anyway.
She glanced around at the room. Bed in the middle, all made up with sheets and pillows. Some college girl's frilly pink blanket used as a curtain in the window. Melody swallowed. Why do this? Why go to all this trouble if you're just going to take what you want? He motioned to her clothes, and Melody unbuttoned her jeans. She wiggled out of them and picked up the dress.
You think all this is for you?
The soldier shook his head.
Nah, this is morale, babe. Gotta keep all the guys working somehow, right?
Melody stepped into the dress, one leg at a time, and shimmied the red fabric up her hips. She tucked it under her shirt and zipped it halfway up the back. So this is what? A brothel? She couldn't believe she even uttered the word. The soldier shrugged.
It's whatever the colonel wants it to be.
Colonel Jarvis. The more she learned about him, the more Melody hated the man. She unhooked her bra and hoisted the dress up to cover her chest before yanking her clothes off. She zipped up the rest of the dress and looked down. It had to be a prop from some production the drama department put on at the campus theater. The skirt flared out around her in layers, and the boning up the side mashed her breasts up toward her neck. It was ridiculous. She glanced up at the soldier. Happy now?
Getting there.
He lowered the gun.
Kick your clothes this way.
Melody did as he asked. The longer she kept him talking, the longer she could delay the inevitable. So where are you going to get all the women? He laughed as he gathered her clothes and shoved them in a hamper in the corner.
Anywhere.
So that's it? You're just going to kidnap them?
It's worked other places.
But this is the United States. Prostitution is illegal.
Not anymore. Now it's every man for himself.
The soldier puffed his chest out like he was proud of it. Melody pushed the issue. Why listen to Jarvis, then? Why take orders when you can get out on your own? The soldier scowled and opened his mouth, but he hung there, unsure what to say. After a moment, he stormed toward her.
Shut up and get on the bed.
Melody backed away, sliding along the wall until her hip hit the mattress. She had to get out of there. She couldn't let this happen. The soldier grabbed her by the arm and she batted at him, smacking his knuckles with her palm. He jerked her forward and she stumbled in the dress, almost falling on top of him. He reached for her hair, but Melody shied back, ducking as he swiped at the air. The door to the room burst open and Melody spun, hoping for salvation. But she saw the opposite. Her eyes went wide as his name slipped out. Captain Ferguson. He smiled, broad chest puffed, shoulders wide and open.
Ms. Harper, we meet again.
The other soldier hoisted her closer, but the captain shook his head.
Back off, Private. Officers first.
But the colonel said...
The colonel sent me to check on your progress. I'm telling you to leave. Go set up another room. We might have more lovely ladies joining us tonight.
Melody's eyes went wide. What did you do? He grinned.
I'm afraid that's classified.
Ferguson sauntered forward while the private stalked toward the door. As soon as it shut, the captain reached for her. Melody stumbled back until she hit the wall. There wasn't anywhere left to go. She reached for the bed, scrabbling for anything to hold on to. Ferguson's hand snaked around her waist. He pulled her close. She inhaled, and the smell of him, all sweat and stink and son of a bitch swirled together, made her gag. Melody whimpered. Ferguson laughed, and his hot breath hit her face as he grabbed the front of the dress with his free hand. His fingers dug into her side as he yanked, hard. The cheap fabric ripped straight down the middle, exposing her skin. A tortured sob bubbled up her throat, half scream, half cry of desperation. This shouldn't be happening. Couldn't be happening. A month ago at this time, she would be tucked into her own bed and about to fall asleep. Now she was trapped in a waking nightmare that might never end. The men under Jarvis's command were no longer the military. They were evil, terrifying soldiers who didn't care about the people of Eugene. Ferguson's hand dug beneath the dress, groping her body, and Melody pinched her eyes shut. I'm never getting out of here. I'm never going to get away. She thought about Danny, and how hard she fought off her attackers, how she didn't let any of them touch her like this. Melody didn't know what to do. She didn't know how to fight back or save herself. She opened her eyes and stared at the man who was about to take what he wanted. Her hands balled into fists. Her toes dug into the floor. She never played sports or got into a fight or learned kickboxing at the gym. But she had to try. She had to fight back. Melody pulled back her leg to kick the captain where it counted when the door slammed open. Ferguson shoved Melody onto the bed. Get out! I'm not even close to done. Melody landed with a bounce and scurried back, as a man she'd never seen before swayed in the doorway.
Get your hands off my woman.
He listed, more drunk than sober, into the room. Ferguson advanced toward the bed.
You can wait. I'm first.
The drunk shook his head so far he stumbled with it.
Not a chance. Major Trump's captain, remember?
He pointed at a shiny thing on his collar and grinned. Ferguson swore, his hands hanging in the air in front of Melody for a moment, as if he couldn't decide. At last, he stepped away from Melody. She struggled up into a sitting position and tugged the ruined front of the dress around her body. The captain snorted.
This is bullshit. I earned this.
You wanted to tell Jarvis that?
Ferguson cursed again, ran his hands over his big head.
Fine. She's all yours.
A little privacy, please?
The captain practically spat at the man as he rushed past.
Don't wear her out. I'm next.
The door slammed shut so hard it shook the whole building. The other soldier stumbled back to it and twisted the lock. As soon as he turned around, all pretense of intoxication disappeared. He straightened up and smoothed his shirt.
Miss Harper?
Melody risked a nod.
I'm Major James Larkin.
He smiled.
I'm a friend of Colt's.
Chapter 24. Melody. University of Oregon Campus, Eugene, Oregon, 10 p.m. Melody tugged the dress tighter around her chest and stared at the major. Was he serious? Or was this just some sort of trap to convince her to let her guard down long enough to gain the upper hand? Larkin stepped up to the window and lifted the pink blanket. He spoke so quietly, Melody strained to listen.
We don't have much time. Ferguson will be back as soon as his raging case of blue balls dies down.
How do I know you're telling the truth? He let the makeshift curtain fall.
For starters, I'm not pinning you to the mattress and ripping off the rest of that hideous dress.
And?
I'm going to help you escape.
Melody didn't know if his words were enough, but what choice did she have? How do I know you're not some psycho who just wants to get me out of here so he can lock me in some abandoned building and torture me for days?
You don't. Guess you'll have to trust me.
He frowned at her dress and all the layers spilling across the bed.
Please tell me you have some other clothes.
After pointing him to the hamper, Larkin tossed her clothes at her and turned around so she could change. Her hands still shook, and her heart beat like a racehorse after a quarter mile around the track. But she managed to ditch the dress and shove her clothes on in record time. Ready. Larkin turned back around, nodding at her black shirt and jeans,
Good. Now let's get out of here. He motioned toward the bed. Get up there and bang it around, will you? Maybe scream, shout for help? This window is going to be loud. Melody did as he asked, jumping up on the bed and shaking it about as she banged on the wall. Get off of me! No, I won't! She slammed the bed into the wall in a rhythmic motion, as Larkin shoved the window with all his might. His face turned red, his shoulders hunched, but after an agonizing screech, the glass moved. He motioned for her to keep going. Melody banged the bed against the wall again as he shoved once more. After a final burst of strength, he pushed the window open far enough to fit through. He ushered Melody over, and she hoisted herself up as he cupped his hands around his mouth to shout back into the room. Don't you run away! I'm just getting started! He slipped out after her and landed on the grass beneath the window. All right, now we run. Keep close behind me. They skirted the buildings in the dark, weaving in and out of the campus, freezing every time a soldier appeared. Melody didn't know how far they would go or what Larkin had in mind, but she was free from that hellhole, and Ferguson couldn't touch her now. She almost ran into Larkin as he pulled up short a few feet from the end of another dorm. We've got extra uniforms in that building over there. If we're going to get out of here, you need to change. Wait here. Melody nodded and waited as Larkin emerged from the darkness. He strode across the road to the front steps of the building where a junior soldier waited. The other man saluted, and Larkin reciprocated before launching into some sort of explanation. A minute later, he disappeared inside. All the air whooshed from Melody's lungs as she eased down onto the grass. If she wanted to run, now was the time. But where would she go? The second she left Larkin, she would be caught and hauled back to that room. She shoved down the horror of what might have been and breathed in the cool night air. Trusting Larkin was the only choice. He could get them out of there, and with any luck, back to Colt, Doug, and the rest of her little makeshift family. Just as she made up her mind, Larkin strode out of the building with a bundle tucked under his arm. He said something to the soldier that made him laugh, and stepped off the platform. He walked past where Melody was crouched and doubled back. I wasn't sure what size you'd be, so I had to guess. Put them on, and the cover too. Then we'll see about requisitioning a vehicle. Melody tugged the uniform on over her clothes and tucked and buttoned as best she could before shoving all her hair up and away. She would never pass for a soldier in the daylight, but maybe in the dark she had a chance. She glanced up at Larkin. What do you think? You're the sloppiest soldier I've ever seen, but it's better than jeans and a t-shirt. Let's go. He led the way through more mazes of buildings until they stopped at the edge of a parking lot. Jarvis keeps most of the vehicles under tight control, but since I've been off campus for the past couple of weeks, I should be able to leave. What if we run into trouble? Larkin smiled. Shoot first, then punch the gas. Great. Melody followed him into the parking lot. He whispered as they walked. Straighten up. Add some swagger. He dropped his voice even lower. Walk like you've got a dick. Melody tried, bowing out her legs like a cowboy as she puffed out her chest. She felt like Yosemite Sam. Shoot for average, not porn star. Her cheeks flushed hot, and Melody dropped the waddle. Better. Now hurry. Look for a Humvee with a jerry can in the back. Larkin headed toward the nearest one and peered inside. Melody followed along right behind. What's a jerry can? Larkin grumbled about civilians and their lack of knowledge and yanked open the door to the vehicle. It's that thing, back there. Now get in. He left the door open and rushed around to the driver's side. Melody glanced at a container that looked like a massive metal canteen. A jerry can. She'd learned something new. After climbing in, she reached for the door.
It was flipped all the way around to the outside. How am I supposed to reach that? Melody grabbed the handle and tugged. It didn't budge. Crap! Leaning even further out the door, she braced herself on the floorboard. With two hands on the handle and a massive heave, Melody managed to swing the beast of a door and fall into the seat as it slammed shut.
It's about time you got in here.
Larkin flipped a metal switch on the dash and waited a moment before cranking the engine. The Humvee grumbled to life, and Larkin backed it out of the space.
Hold on. It's not the smoothest ride.
Melody grabbed onto the seat as the vehicle lurched forward. They barreled out of the parking lot and onto the road.
Where are we going?
To Colt. I'm assuming you know where that is.
What about Gloria?
Larkin cast Melody a glance.
Who's that?
My neighbor. She was taken the same time I was. They dropped her off at a building closer to where we came into campus.
Larkin thought about it as he drove.
Must be the brig.
They converted a dorm over there to a makeshift prison. He shook his head.
It's too risky. We can't do it.
But we can't leave her here.
It's that or get ourselves killed. We can regroup with Colt, come up with a plan and break her out. But we can't do that right now.
Melody leaned back on the seat. She couldn't leave Gloria. But what choice did she have? She was right back to zero options. She crossed her arms.
Harvey is going to be furious.
Who's Harvey?
Glory's husband.
Larkin grimaced.
Tell me where to go.
Melody looked at Larkin. From the side, he seemed like every other army guy around the place. Clean-shaven, angled jaw, no-nonsense demeanor. Could she really trust him?
How do you know Colt?
We overlapped at Walter Reed. I was recovering from back surgery. Him from the helo crash that ended his career as a SEAL.
Plausible. Melody sighed. She could be making the biggest mistake of her life. But once again, the options were this or nothing.
He's up north of campus on Belmead. I'll show you the way.
20 minutes later, they stopped at the end of the street.
Are you sure this is right?
Larkin squinted into the gloom, idling the Humvee on the side of the road. Melody couldn't believe it. She yanked on the door handle and kicked the door open, and was running before Larkin could shout a single word.
It can't be. It can't be.
She tore down the street, her two sets of clothes rubbing against each other like sandpaper. As far as she could see, there was nothing but chaos. Charred beams, collapsed roofs, smoldering ashes. Belmead Way was burned to the ground. She stopped in front of Harvey's house. Nothing stood except the stone of the chimney. The big, beautiful oak tree, with its gnarled branches and perfect reading nook, sat naked and covered in soot in the backyard. Not a single leaf remained. Stumbling down the street, Melody looked in horror at house after house. At last, she stopped in front of what used to be her own. Jarvis's words from before the brothel filled her mind.
Burn it down.
They had burned every last house. She crumpled to the ground next to the mailbox, now blackened and half falling down. Her parents' house? The home she grew up in? The place that held the greatest memories of her childhood. Running through the sprinklers in the backyard. Making ice cream with the hand-cranked churner in the shade of the patio. Her first kiss under the porch light. Her parents waving goodbye and never coming back, thanks to a car accident outside of Portland. Larkin's footsteps stopped behind her. She sniffed up the sooty air.
Are we too late? Are they all dead?
He crouched in the street.
If I know Colt, he's safe.
Melody wiped at her face.
Then the others are too.
Any idea where they would have gone?
Melody lifted her head.
Only one.
Day 24. Chapter 25. Danny. Shaw Residence, Eugene, Oregon, 1 a.m. Danny squinted into the darkness from her position in the window. Lucas Shaw's apartment sat on the top floor of a shabby walk-up, catering to broke college kids and lower-tier employees. Apart from the lack of drug dealers and loitering addicts, it wasn't that different from her mother's place. A small living room with a futon, beat-up coffee table covered in books and water rings, an eating kitchen with a table big enough for two at best. A bedroom that smelled like dude, with a black sheet for a curtain and piles of clothes on the floor. Danny glanced behind her to the small table Colt, Doug, and Harvey crowded around. They pointed and whispered and made sweeping motions with their hands, discussing options and plans of attack. Will was curled up in a threadbare upholstered chair with Lottie in his lap, both fast asleep. Turning back to the window, Danny closed one eye to peer through the rifle scope. She wasn't tired, not by a long shot. How could she sleep with Jarvis planning God knew what, Melody and Gloria missing, and a whole army out there searching for them? She thought about Melody and what she must have done to save Danny's life, putting herself between the soldiers and Danny's unconscious body, protecting her when she couldn't protect herself. She owed Melody an apology, Gloria too. They had taken her and Colt in, helped them, and the whole time Danny held back, wondering if they were too weak to survive. Scanning the road through the scope, she eased the rifle barrel across the back of the chair, first to the left, then the right. Movement caught her eye, and she froze. A vehicle emerged from the shadows, driving with the lights off. Danny tensed and tried to focus on the shape and the size. The closer it came, the more her dread grew. A brown National Guard Humvee. Crap! She turned around, about to call for Colt, when she hesitated. They put her on watch for a reason. She could handle it on her own. Danny swung back around and watched the Humvee slow to a stop outside the building. Easing her finger around the trigger, Danny waited. No army jerks were storming this place on her watch. She wouldn't be caught unaware and unprepared again. The driver's side door swung open. A soldier emerged and turned to face the building. Danny pulled back. No freaking way! Major Larkin stood at the door to the Humvee, gesturing to someone still inside. Danny lowered her head back down and took aim. That jerk! She knew he was a bad guy ever since he strode out of the model home and demanded her weapon. It didn't matter that Colt knew him or that he let her go. He was one of them. The passenger side door to the vehicle opened, and Danny moved the rifle to get a better view. Another soldier, who looked like he'd fallen out of bed to make the trip, his shirt and pants a wrinkled mess. Danny almost smirked. They wouldn't know what hit them. She took aim, inhaled, and let the breath out through her mouth. Her finger twitched as the second soldier took off his cover. Black hair spilled from the top of his head, and the man spun around. Danny sucked in a breath of air and yanked her finger off the trigger. Melody? It can't be. She stared through the scope as Melody gestured toward the building. Larkin said something, and she nodded with a smile. How did he find her? How did they get away? Danny leaned back and forced her lungs to fill with air. I almost shot her. She turned around. Colt? He glanced up, mid-sentence, mouth still open. Larkin's here. He brought Melody with him. Colt hustled to the window.
She's not a hostage. Looks like Larkin's flipped sides.
He unholstered his handgun.
I'll check it out just in case. I'm coming too.
Doug grabbed a rifle and followed Colt to the door. Danny waited by the window, chewing on her lip as she chastised herself. She should have told Colt immediately and let him assess the threat. If she'd shot Melody. The door to the apartment opened, and Melody stepped inside. She looked ridiculous in a too-big military uniform, all rumpled and untucked. But she was alive. Danny set the rifle down and stood up, watching while Colt ushered Larkin in and made the introductions. He waved at Danny and she peeled off the chair to say hello.
"I think you've met Danny."
Larkin raised an eyebrow.
"Not just a pesky street rat, huh? I sort of figured."
He stuck out his hand with a smile.
"Major James Larkin, but just call me Larkin. Everyone does."
Danny shook it and pulled away. "Sorry I shot one of your men."
"Who, O'Reilly?"
Larkin waved her off.
"He deserved it."
Danny opened her mouth to agree when Melody's arms wrapped around her in a sideways hug. "Danny, I'm so glad you're alive." Danny winced from the squeeze and Melody pulled back. "Sorry, is your shoulder all right? Since you're not dead, I'm assuming Colt patched you up?" She nodded. "Thank you for all that you did. Colt said I'd have died if you hadn't slowed the bleeding. I wish I could have done more. There just wasn't time." Danny pressed her lips together and willed her emotions back. She wouldn't cry. Not now. Not ever. Melody turned to her brother, her smile sliding into a frown. "Do you know? Did you see it?" He stilled. "Is it gone?" Melody nodded and her voice caught when she tried to speak.
They burned the entire street. There's nothing but ash and smoke."
She reached for her brother's hand. "Everything's gone."
"Not everything."
He pointed toward Will sleeping in the corner. Melody followed his direction and stifled an exuberant shout.
"Lottie! Oh, thank you!"
She moved to go grab her dog, but Doug held her back.
"How'd you know to come here?"
Melody glanced at Larkin and shrugged. "It's the only place I could think of, and I knew Jarvis would never look for us here."
"Why not?"
"Because Lucas is dead." Melody swallowed and walked over to the window, looking out into the darkness as she relayed what happened at the university. Danny shuddered as Melody explained the shooting. She knew Jarvis was a bad man, but to shoot a man who gave him information, a man who turned on the sister of his supposed friend to help the army. She chewed on her lip as Melody voiced the same thought screaming inside Danny's head. "We have to rescue Gloria." Everyone agreed. Colt spoke up.
"You with us, Larkin?"
The major nodded.
"After seeing what they plan to do to Melody and hearing her description of Lucas's murder, I can't support Jarvis, even if it creates a power vacuum in the town."
Doug stepped forward, almost cutting Larkin off.
"What do they do to you? Are you hurt?"
Melody shook her head. "I'm fine, thanks to Larkin. He saved me." Larkin held up his hand as if no thanks were due.
"I wish we could have rescued your friend as well. There just wasn't time."
"There is now."
Colt gathered everyone around the table. "Will told me about the university's transportation department. It's not guarded and easy to access." Larkin nodded.
"I've never heard anyone even mention that part of campus."
He pointed at a spot on the map, maybe half a mile away.
"They're most likely holding Gloria here, at the new brig."
Colt nodded.
"I wondered where they were setting one up. The airplane passengers were always kept far, far away from this side of campus. We can use the Humvee to get into the transportation area, park it behind some buses, and sneak in on foot the rest of the way." Colt and Larkin hashed out the rest of a plan, while Danny committed it to memory. It meant everyone playing a part. No spectators this go-round.
Melody stripped out of the uniform and handed it to Colt.
It's big for me. It might fit you.
He took it with a nod.
Can you stand watch? Larkin needs cover.
Melody took the rifle from Danny and hustled over to the chair while Larkin hit the stairs. Colt busied himself in Lucas's kitchen, rummaging around in all the cabinets. He fished a bunch of empty beer bottles from a recycling bin and put them on the counter, along with a handful of dish towels and soap. Then he grabbed a bottle of some sort of liquor and unscrewed the cap. Danny scrunched up her face.
You're doing the dishes and drinking?
Colt raised an eyebrow as Larkin appeared carrying a big rectangular can.
No, dear. He's making Molotov cocktails.
She watched as Colt went to work, pouring a little bit of dish soap into each bottle and following with some of the fuel. Larkin cut the towels into strips and soaked them in the liquor before stuffing them into each neck. After they finished, Colt glanced around with a frown.
I need some stoppers. This guy had to drink wine. Danny, find me some corks.
She went through the trash, drawers, couch, and coffee table, but came up empty. There had to be something. She rushed into his bedroom and spun around in a slow circle. Come on, come on. Her eyes landed on a palm tree hanging on the wall, and she grinned. After wrestling it off the hook, she rushed back into the kitchen and held it up. Will this do? Colt almost laughed.
What is that? Recycled art?
Doug rolled his eyes.
Lucas liked to think he was cultured, more of a professor than a social media monkey. He bought that off some student artist at the art fair last month. He only used items found in the college trash as supplies.
Danny raised an eyebrow. That explained the wine cork trunk and the beer bottle palm leaves. But the sand that looked like chewed up and spit out rice? She shivered. She didn't want to know. Colt pointed at it. Dig those corks loose and shove them in the top of the bottles, but leave some of the wick out. We need to be able to light it. Danny followed the instructions, popping the wine corks out of the trunk before wedging one down tight into each neck. Larkin scooped up the finished bottles and loaded them into the empty recycling bin.
I searched the Humvee, but there's no extra ammo. How much have you got?
Not nearly enough. Colt checked his handgun.
A full magazine and one spare. None of the rifles are full. Shit.
Colt nodded.
We'd need more of a diversion than a handful of Molotovs.
Larkin glanced at Danny.
Ever act in a school play?
She shook her head.
First time for everything.
He pointed toward the door.
Come with me. We need to find you a costume.
Danny glanced at Colt, but he just shrugged and motioned her along. She followed Larkin into the hallway.
What are we doing exactly?
Larkin grinned.
We're going to be Act One. Colt and his little bomb buddies will be Act Two.
What's Act Three?
Running like hell and hoping we don't get shot.
Chapter 26. Danny. Streets of Eugene, Oregon. 3 a.m.
I can't believe I'm wearing this.
It's not that bad. Danny looked down at the little black dress and heels.
I'm going to break an ankle.
You can take them off as soon as we get outside.
No.
She shook her head and kicked off the shoes before tugging back on her worn-out Converse.
I'll wear the stupid dress, but I'm not wearing those shoes.
It's for effect, you...
Melody interrupted from the front. Leave her alone, Larkin. No guy will even look at her shoes. He waggled a stick of something Danny's direction.
How about mascara?
She scowled, but snatched the tube from him and unscrewed the cap while they bounced down the road in the back of the Humvee.
I still don't see how this will work.
How much do you know about 19-year-old men?
She scrunched up her nose.
Nothing.
Colt spoke up from the front seat.
It'll work.
Danny scowled and managed to swipe some mascara on her lashes without poking out an eye. Fine, but this is the last time I'm ever wearing a dress.
Not even when you get married?